Sister Talk with Gary, Sue, and Brandon starts now.
It's a twister! It's a twister! Back up! Back up! Back up!
And welcome to Twister Talk. My name is Gary. Thanks for joining us. Got a special interview for you today on Twister Talk. A gentleman who was a young wee lad when the super outbreak hit. He lived near the Monticello, Indiana area. And in 1974, of course, we know the F4 went through Monticello and several of the surrounding towns, doing a lot of damage and taking many lives. It was an F4 tornado in central Indiana that year. And Brad Hartch is going to join us, and he's going to talk to us about what he saw and what happened afterwards, but also how they're celebrating the anniversary of that horrible day today with a positive, good outlook. So let's go to our interview with Brad Hartch here on Twister Talk. You know, we're talking about the super outbreak here on Twister Talk as we celebrate 50th anniversary. We call it a celebration because the innovations that have happened since then were spurred on by this super outbreak. You know, when we talk about tornadoes and we talk about the outbreak, we hit a major city. You talk about Xenia. You'll talk about Gwin, Tennessee. You'll talk about, you know, Tanner, Alabama. And we forget sometimes that these tornadoes just don't visit the one city or one town. They may go through an incredible amount of land. And the one we're talking about today started near Monticello, Indiana. But this tornado was an F4 and totaled the distance of 121 miles through Indiana. And two of the towns that were hit the hardest besides Monticello was a town called Rochester and Talma, Indiana. Now, we want to welcome Brad Hartch to Twister Talk because Brad was a resident of that time in Rochester, Indiana. And Brad, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me. And when I heard about the opportunity, I think the first thing I thought of is this has been a significant event in my life and others. And to be able to share that was important. So thank you for having me.
Now, you lived in Rochester, right?
I did, yes.
So what? How much do you remember that day, and what was that day like?
Your listeners may find this interesting.
Okay.
At that time, my brother and I were living with our parents, and I was about to turn 4 years old. So I was three and a half. And what's remarkable to me is the clarity of what I remember and the smells and the feelings that I had. And my parents had purchased a trailer. We lived in a mobile home at the time. And I remember telling my mom, you know, I can sit here and draw where every room and every door is in our trailer. I just remember it that clearly. Hmm. I remember getting knocked out and what steps we took to get to the hospital. And she looked at me and said, "You were 3 years old." And I said, "Mom, I still feel the wet grass on my feet when we were running across the yard." Hmm. And so I think some people will find that, you know, amazing. I it's something I've lived with all my life. But what happened to us is we were about 3 miles west of Rochester on State Road 14. And again, my parents did have a trailer at the time, and my dad was out doing some night work. My brother and I were with my mom, and she asked us to step away from the glass windows, and then everything just, we were knocked out. Everything went black.
Oh my.
And the tornado had pushed our trailer about 50 yards off the hill and smashed it onto the ground.
Oh my gosh.
And I remember being in darkness, and I remember my mom had her hands around my ankle and she was screaming for my brother because she didn't know where he was at. Well, God saved us that day. The wall fell over and the couch covered us. So we were underneath the couch, underneath the wall, and there was a hole in the side of the trailer. And that's how we got out. We crawled out of the couch, out of the hole. And so Now this is rural Indiana, of course.
Right.
And so we went across to the neighbor's house on the north side of State Road 14. That's where the Nichols lived. Mm-hmm. Tom and LaDonna. Tom was a bus driver, a farmer, and he also worked at the high school. And I remember they sat us on a couch in their house, and they were trying to make a way for us to get into the hospital. And I remember looking up, and there's no roof. There's no house. Mm. It was completely open. And to this day, the only thing that remained from their house is the porch.
Wow.
They kept the porch. They added on. Now, Tom, he had to move some things out of the way, but he was able to get his truck out of the barn.
Mm-hmm.
And they piled us in. And I remember we didn't go east towards town. Mm-hmm. But later I had found that one of the six who passed away was a semi driver from Rochester. Mm-hmm. And his truck was hit nearby our home and the Fulton County REMC building, mm-hmm. which was devastated. And unfortunately, he passed away. So we took back roads and we went to the hospital. I don't remember a lot about the trip, but I do remember being in the hospital and doctors and nurses and people everywhere. And later, my mom said that we were in the cafeteria and it was just full of people.
Wow.
And they were taking names. They wanted to know who was here so that they could share that with other people. And all of a sudden, my father showed up and he's hugging me. And I just remember my back was just sore and hurt. And it was later that, again, my mother said, yes, you guys were really bruised up, you know, bad. Fortunately, that was the extent of our injuries.
Right.
But from that point on, the tornado played a significant role in our lives. My mom lost her wedding ring. She had it sitting on the counter. Mm. And weeks after, a lot of the youth from the community, Rochester Community High School, home of the Zebras, junior high kids, farmers, mm-hmm. They just went out and started helping people all throughout the community. And to this day, my parents are so grateful for those people that volunteer, especially the kids
yes.
that came out. And while they were cleaning up and helping my parents, one of them found my mom's ring out in the yard.
Oh, that's
how
great.
Amazing that is. But she was able to get that back. But, you know, with that, I also have to say that they lost everything.
Right.
And I can't imagine what that would be like for a young married couple with a 2 and 3 year old to start, you know, building your life together and then everything get wiped out. And to this day, my dad says, you know, that's when I learned that it's not about this world or the material things. It's about family and caring for each other and health.
That's right.
And, you know, as I was growing up, as a teenager, a young adult, you know, we get into things that we're interested in, whether mm-hmm. cars or boats or things of that nature. We have a beautiful lake there in Rochester, mm-hmm. but it took me a while to really understand that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it came from the tornado. It was devastating.
Yes,
now,
it was.
I'll also say that for two young brothers who live in rural Indiana near cornfields and wooded areas, we thought that it was normal to go out into the woods and look for treasures.
Mm-hmm.
They were littered with debris. Maybe it's a metal spoon or a broken plate or a part of a picture frame or a piece of wood. That was normal to us. In fact, mm-hmm. Many of the trees in the area were bent over 90 degrees.
Mm.
Some of them went up and then came back and touched the ground. Again, the tornado pushed them out of the ground and pushed
right.
them over. And we would climb on those and we would build forts. And to us, that was normal. And it wasn't until later we thought, oh, yeah, the tornado did all of this stuff.
It built your playground for you. So, yeah, I mean, you think about that.
As sad as that sounds, yeah.
That's exactly I've heard similar stories over the years where I've read online about people. And, you know, Brad, what you're making a very good point. I have read over the years many stories by survivors of Xenia or Gwyn or anywhere else. And they don't talk about the tornado as much as they talk about everybody helping everybody else. Yeah. And I think that's interesting, the way a lot of us handle it. We find strength to pull ourselves together and work as a unit and a community to put things back together. And you're just saying the same thing that I've been reading and hearing about for years. And I think that's great.
You're exactly right. And I would say that the one place that anybody in the Fulton County area can go to, and that is the Google Newspaper Archive. Mm-hmm. And this was a project from 2006 to 2011. And our public library had pretty much all of them on microfilm, microfiche. They are online. And you can go to April 4th, 1974, mm-hmm. April 5th, April 6th, April 8th. And you will see what the community was doing at that time. Right. I am even to this day impressed. It wasn't about the pictures. It wasn't about the, the sensationalism. The newspaper was used to let people know where people were at.
Right.
It was used to keep track of those, unfortunately, who died, the six people of Rochester, including a small child mm-hmm. who died. It was used to let people know where people were relocated. And several of our newspaper editions listed relocation addresses for people in the community. And this went on and on. I think one of the things that first started was they listed those who were, who visited the hospital and were released, mm-hmm. and those who were admitted to the hospital, but they also included other surrounding hospitals, like South Bend and, Peru and other right. places. And isn't that amazing that, we take technology for granted, but what an important role the newspaper played in a natural disaster.
Yes, it did. And, you'll notice that if you get a chance, and we'll put a link on our Facebook page and on our webpage for Twister Talk that you can go look at those articles in the newspaper that Brad's talking about. But, you saw that everywhere. You look at papers from Xenia, you look at the Cincinnati Inquirer, the Louisville newspaper, all these newspapers were so important disseminating information after these storms. And you can't, everything is so instant today, but you can't remember how important that was back then, that these papers were being published and local people could find out what's going on, find out where to go to get help, find out where, check on people and find out what hospitals. And yes, the journalism served an importantly tremendous resource for so many people. Because let's face it, after a tornado like that, a lot of people are just kind of dazed. Like, what happened? I've lost everything. And then they realize there's many people who went through the same thing and maybe lost loved ones and family, but it pulls them together. And so the newspapers were an extremely, extremely treasured resource back in those days. No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
It certainly was. And, not all communities have a local radio station.
Right.
Rochester does, WROI Rochester. Again, another resource. And, as I was growing older, inquiring with my father on, how to be a good man, mm-hmm. when I get to the age. And I asked him and said, now you're in your early 20s. How did you get through that?
Right.
And what he told me, I'll never forget, he said, it was the other men of the church. Mm-hmm. He said, I can't tell you how important the church was to us, and not just their family church.
Right.
Churches throughout the community, they didn't care what religion you were, if you were Jewish or Catholic or Presbyterian, did not matter.
Right.
They all came together as a community. And I know that there were hundreds of communities throughout the Midwest. This was a big super outbreak.
It was incredible.
Yeah. And so, again, when we see natural disasters, yes, Red Cross, yes, the government, yes, private industry, but you just cannot you can't discount the power of God-fearing people who are there always, you know.
After Hurricane Katrina, the first groups in there after Katrina were not the government. They were faith-based organizations, Christians going down there with food and clothing and supplies and ministering to the people. So, yeah, we can't underscore that enough, that the faith-based organizations and churches are sometimes the first responders because they're right there in the community. And it may take a day or so for the Red Cross and other agencies to get there. They're there making a difference right away. And you can't overstate that point. That's how important it was then and how important it is today. So,
go
ahead.
I was just going to say that while I was growing up, my father was employed by the RAMC. He was a lineman for the county. Mm-hmm. And I've heard so many stories in my life of snowstorms and ice storms and wind damage. And I asked him, I said, now, here you lost everything. You're working at the RAMC. You need to take care of your family. Well, who went out and rebuilt the lines? Mm. He said, they came from everywhere.
Right.
They came from everywhere. They came from Michigan. They came from Ohio, Illinois. They were sending work crews. And it wasn't just the electrical companies, you know.
Yeah.
So many others get involved. And I remember growing up, and particularly one Easter, I was devastated because my father had to leave Saturday to go to Southern Indiana to an ice storm. I was maybe 7 or 8. Mm. And it was just so, I was just so hurt that I wouldn't be with my father that day. But now, knowing what I know now, you know, he had to go help another community. They needed power. These are people in need. And this, again, I don't want to focus too much on just the RAMC, but it's so true with so many, you know, industries that we have. And I know that RAMC is all over the state, and other electrical corporations are there and are prepared to move out to other communities when they're needed. And that's amazing to me.
That is. And that, you see that again. You're right. We never hear much about these kind of stories, but they're the ones that are really the most important. The day-to-day routines of everybody that pulls together to do things such as rebuilding communities, repairing power lines so power comes back on and all those things. I do want to ask you one question, Brad, and you may not remember it. Do you remember actually seeing the tornado? I thought I'd just ask that. I'm not sure if you did or not, but sometimes you people, I've talked to, heard stories and even talked to a few people who are like 5, 6, 7 years old. They said, yeah, I just remember like this real darkness. That's all I remember. I'm just curious.
That is a great question. Now, the home that we lived in, this mobile home, was sitting east and west. Mm-hmm. And our picture window was facing north. Ah. And as you know, the tornado came from Monticello from the southwest.
Right.
So there really wasn't an opportunity for us to see us. And I remember, you know, two brothers, I remember we were fighting over the chair next to the window. It was Dad's chair and Dad wasn't home. And so, you know, we were struggling who got to sit there. And I remember my mom, she goes, you guys, we need to get on the couch. All right, let's get away from the window. The storm is really bad.
Right. But
unfortunately, other than color changes, I don't remember anything about the twister or the tornado. It was literally wind noise, and then we were knocked out.
Right.
Completely blacked out.
Yeah, yeah. I know some people have said, Gary, I remember seeing like the sky would be like yellow black or green black or something.
Green.
Yeah, and then it would everything broke loose. So it just kind of curious because it seems like, like I say, it's kind of, it's interesting to me because people say, I saw weird colors just before the tornado. Everything just looked weird outside. It's like, that's what happens, unfortunately. But, you know, like you say, people did lose their lives in that area. I know Talma, which is not that far to the northeast of you, was almost completely destroyed.
Exactly.
There was hardly anything left.
It came right along the west side of Rochester. Everyone remembers the Riddle Elementary School with the damage they took there. And then it went right towards Talma. And, you know, again, if I go back to the newspaper articles, it's just amazing. Here I see Governor Otis R. Bowen took a 13-hour trip by airplane, and he visited Newcastle, Monticello, Rochester, Angola, Tell City, New Albany, Madison. That is an enormous amount of damage for a governor to have to go and look at and decide how they will respond. And it seems like 13 hours. Can you imagine?
Yes.
Looking at damage for 13 hours.
I
just incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. You see damage after damage. So many pictures of all your area, areas all over this part of the country. Just you literally see is like just a mass of debris. Look, the old thing it says, like people who served in the war said, just looked like carpet bombing. It looked like just a big scythe that just sweeped through the countryside. It's like, well, we forget sometimes that these tornadoes have winds over 250 miles an hour. And that's just, and sadly, it's like a buzzsaw. It just goes through everything, and it's a terrible sight. And thankfully, so, you know, even though there was 300 people died, you still have the fact that there was so much, there was good that came out of it, believe it or not. And even in the midst of this incredible pain, good things happened with people, and lives did get rebuilt, and it did force the U.S. government to start really getting serious about really funding all this Doppler research and other things with the National Weather Service and the Storm Prediction Center in Oklahoma, and saying, I think we better wake up and get off the pot and get this done, because this can't happen again.
And you're right. It wasn't that long ago. I'm getting older, so maybe it was. But I remember the people taking up signatures and the surveys on whether we should even do Doppler or not,
right?
You know, before they were built, and they wanted to know what the residents thought. And yeah, they were in gas stations, they were in public spaces, and I just remember a lot of people signing up, going, "Hey, I remember the snowstorm of '78, or I remember the tornado of '74. This is okay. It costs money, but this is a technology that will really benefit and save people's lives." And so then, you know, fortunately we were able to do that, and it's really great. And it keeps getting better.
Yes, it does.
We did talk about the tornado that came through central Indiana and Ohio just the 14th of March,
right,
and how well our newscasters were able to identify that threat and that circular motion and warn people minutes, tens of minutes, maybe even a half hour before it reached the community. Mm-hmm. And boy, that's something that we just take for granted. I'm glad we have that available to help save people.
It is a truly valuable resource, and the National Weather Service has done so much strides in going forward, and the Storm Prediction Center has become more and more on top of things as the weather goes by. You know, any closing thoughts, Brad, that you'd like to share with the audience?
I appreciate what you've done, raising awareness, the website, the Facebook groups, the interviews, making resources like the Rochester Sentinel online available to people who can go back and read about this. Mm-hmm. It was significant.
Yes,
and
it was.
Still remains significant to a lot of people. And we don't celebrate it as a 50th. I think we look at it as a memorial to those who passed, those who were injured, but also we want to celebrate all of those people that put their selves aside and came out to help their friends, their neighbors, or people they didn't even know.
Right.
And that is just a sense of community that you cannot create or recreate. It just happens. And I'm proud to come from a small community like that here in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people throughout the state and Ohio and Michigan and Illinois feel the same way. And they've been through these significant events. And so to have the opportunity to share a little bit of what a young person had seen, I'm glad to be able to do it. And I appreciate you so much for having me.
All right. We've been talking to Brad Hartz. Brad lived in Rochester, in Indiana. And when he was just about 3 years old, the tornado knocked on his door and let itself in. But you hear the great stories of everything that happened there, how people came together even amidst the tragedy and helped rebuild things and rebuild lives. So, Brad, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it very, very much.
It's been my pleasure.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us for this episode of Twister Talk. I'm Gary. We interviewed Brad Hartz. Brad shared his memories of the 1974 Monticello tornado during the super outbreak and how the city and area came together afterwards. For Twister Talk and for Brandon and Sue, I'm Gary. We'll see you next time.